Welcome to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. Family caregiving is not new. Prior to the 1800s and the emergence of trained nurses, family members provided care to their loved ones at home. But this care largely consisted of helping them with bathing, dressing, moving, eating, and providing basic comfort measures. Today, family members are continuing to care for their loved ones, but that care has become much more complex. Often, family caregivers are providing care that nurses and others can find challenging. And when the family member is trying to both work a full-time job and provide daily care to someone, it's even more difficult. A new report from the United Hospital Fund and AARP details the challenges that employed family caregivers face. And here to discuss the report with us is one of its authors, Carol Levine, who is the Director of Families and Healthcare Project for the United Hospital Fund. Carol, thank you very much for actually returning to Health Styles. You've been a guest on Health Styles before, and I appreciate you coming back.
And it's a delight to be back, Diana. Thank you.
Now, Carol, let me start by noting that you have been doing work related to family caregiving issues for a number of years now, after having your own experience as a family caregiver. So this isn't just some remote topic for you.
No, this is not an abstraction, Diana. And in fact, I came to work on this issue professionally because of a personal experience, which extended over 17 years. My late husband and I were in an automobile accident, and he was left totally disabled, and I cared for him at home with, I would add, the assistance of some wonderful home care aides during the day, but I used to say I'm the night nurse. I was there alone with him at night, so I really understand how hard it is to both maintain a job and provide the level of care that someone who has some serious needs, perhaps not in the same way as my husband, but other kinds of needs. I know how hard it is. I've been there.
And you've been working on this Families and Healthcare Project for a number of years now.
Yes, in fact, since 1996, when I left my work in AIDS and policy, and particularly around orphans, and went to the United Hospital Fund, and thinking in my naivete, well, this would be interesting to do for maybe a year and a half or two. I'll figure this out. What I was trying to do was understand why what I was experiencing and the problems and frustrations I was having didn't seem to be reflected in any of the professional literature that I read when I finally learned the term family caregiver. Actually, it wasn't that. It was informal caregiver, which I immediately did not like because I didn't think what I was doing was any kind of a picnic. But I went to the fund thinking this was something that would be, you know, interesting for a little while. I had no idea, and here I am, you know, all these years later, and having accomplished with the collaboration, the wonderful collaboration of many, many people around the country, and I would certainly place high on that list Susan Reinhart, who is a co-author of the reports that we're going to talk about, but having learned how complicated the job of being a family caregiver really is, and it's getting harder. It's not getting easier.
And certainly the report, your report bears this out. But before we get to the report, are there any estimates of the percentage of the adult population that are family caregivers?
Yes, generally speaking, and, you know, once you start getting into how many and who are they, and every survey has its own little way of doing things. Generally, it's one out of every four or five adults is at some point during a year providing some level of care for a family member or friend. It could be, you know, it doesn't have to be a blood relative or a relative by marriage. So that's the general rule. And overall, using AARP's own estimates, it's about 42 million family caregivers. Mm-hmm. And if you have it as, and if you look at it as any time during a year, it's up to 62 million. It's big numbers, but I think, and you must encounter this too, it seems like it's everybody.
Yeah.
I don't go anywhere these days when I don't meet people. Everyone has a caregiving story to tell.
Yeah.
It's not only about older parents or spouses, as in my case, but about disabled children, about all of the range of people. So it's becoming the norm.
And often multi-generational, right?
And often multi-generational, mm-hmm. absolutely. And often caregivers become what I perhaps too facetiously call serial caregivers. They take on one, and then they take on another one, and then because mm-hmm. they've done such a good job, the family says, well, gee, you really should be taking on this one, and mm-hmm. they do it. So there's a... It's multi-generational, it's multicultural, it's multi-gender.
Yeah.
It's everybody at some point. And I think that it's astonishing to me that given the universality of the experience, that medical practice and policy have not really caught on yet.
Yes.
They're starting to. They really are starting to.
Yes.
But it's...
a long way to go.
It's still out there as, oh, this is something people do because they love the person, and we don't have to really think about that too much.
Yeah.
It's changing,
yeah.
but you do encounter that attitude a lot.
So what percent of the people who are in any one year serving as family caregivers, what percent are employed?
About half. Mm-hmm. Some estimates are higher. 60-70%,
mm-hmm.
but and depending on the age group you look at, older people are more likely not to be employed,
mm-hmm.
But the generation that would normally to be considered to be in their working years, they're employed, full-time or part-time. So the experience of managing a job and caregiving is very common. And I think one of the differences between perhaps the days when concern about informal caregiving arose, which was really after Medicare started to pay for some care, was that that people would abandon their loved ones, which mm-hmm. of course simply has not happened.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been so many changes, Diana, in the social structure and in the employment structure. Women are not staying home.
Mm-hmm.
They're working. And, in the 50s, that's what women did. They stayed home.
Yeah.
And the 60s even. So the expectations of women have changed, but they are still the... majority of family caregivers, although I have to say that more and more and more men are taking on this role. Women still, however, do more of the hands-on heavy lifting.
But I'm surprised in your report.
Literally heavy lifting.
I'm surprised in your report how high the percentage of men was. I think it was
44%
were men.
In the employed caregivers, yes, definitely.
Yes.
Men are doing this. And partly it's the families are smaller, and so if there's one child and the adult child is a guy, he's going to do it. And and men can be really excellent caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a lot of concerns about the baby boomers and the next generation of caregivers. I'm actually a little bit encouraged by the fact that I see in my own family, my son and my sons-in-law, they are as involved in parenting as my daughters and daughter-in-law. Mm. And I think that will carry over into the next generation of caregivers, where it will not seem out of the gender role to become mm-hmm. a caregiver. We'll see. But yes. certainly they, men should be considered in part of this, and they are employed.
Yes.
They're out yep. there working. Women are out there yep. working. Well, everybody has to work. You know, it's not like you can count on one income anymore.
So this report that just came out, that's published
yes.
By AARP and United Hospital Fund, it's entitled Employed Family Caregivers Providing Complex Chronic Care. But it is
right.
a subset of data. It's taken, the analysis is taken from data that were obtained through the report Home Alone, Family Caregivers Providing Complex Chronic Care. Tell us
yes.
a little bit about that survey and where these data come
yes.
from.
I'm glad to. In fact, that survey came out of both Susan Reinhardt, who's a nurse,
mm-hmm.
And my concern over several years now that that the picture of family caregiving tasks, which were limited to activities of daily living, ADLs like bathing and dressing, and instrumental activities of daily living, like transportation and shopping and so forth, really didn't convey the full picture of what family caregivers were doing. And we came at it from different perspectives, Susan from her nursing perspective and me from both my personal experience but also from my professional experience with other caregivers. And so we had earlier done a book, and I edited the book where Susan did a wonderful chapter on looking at the history of ADLs and IADLs. And we were just kind of saying, what is this? Why can't we get a new job description?
Mm-hmm.
So with the two organizations, we did a national survey of family caregivers and asked them specifically about all of the different types of tasks they did, ADLs, IADLs, care coordination, and what we were particularly interested in, what we called medical nursing tasks. And in that, we included complex medication management, wound care, using medical monitors and meters and so forth, and operating medical equipment, as well as some of the other activities. And it is the first national survey that had actually looked at that aspect of family caregiving. And as someone said to us recently, well, that report is a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in some ways it is, because it opened, some people said, oh, well, we know that. We know they're doing that. And then other people said, what? I had no idea that being a family caregiver meant that you had to do all these things. So that's the big survey. We published the report, as you say, Home Alone. And then we decided to look at different subsets of the data. And the first one we decided to look at was employed caregivers. And that is the subject of the shorter paper that we just issued last week. There will be two others. I can say one is about spousal caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
Since most of the talk about family caregivers involves adult children, and we wanted to look at spouses. And also the third one will be about caregivers who are caring for people who have chronic illnesses, probably more than one, but also have some complicating factor like cognitive problems, behavioral problems, sensory deficits, things like that. So this one is about the employed caregivers, which made up half of the sample, almost half, 47%, they were employed. So we looked at the employed caregivers versus the not employed caregivers. And can I give you the bottom line?
Yeah, well,
the ones were doing everything the not employed ones were doing in terms of the medical nursing tasks and care coordination and ADLs and IADLs. So they were... really, it was a little bit of a surprise. We thought they would be doing less of those things, because they had this other major responsibility, but it turned out that the numbers were almost exactly the same.
And let me just remind listeners that we're talking with Carol Levine, the Director of Families and Health Project for the United Hospital Fund. We're talking about the new report, Employed Family Caregivers Providing Complex Chronic Care, that was produced by AARP and the United Hospital Fund. And so Carol, there were some very interesting findings about the kinds of the impact of providing this complex care. And again, this complex care was often things like medication administration beyond just giving a pill. It was multiple medications.
Right.
It was intravenous or injections of some intravenous medications or other injections of some kind. It was dealing with incontinence issues. It was wound care, and they really said that this was demanding and difficult work.
Absolutely, and I think the caregivers almost universally accepted the responsibility of doing these things, but they were terrified.
Yeah.
They were so afraid that they were going to make a mistake. They were going to hurt the person that they were caring for. And this is a person, this is not a patient. This is a person that you love or have, at least have some obligations toward. And they weren't really trained to do this.
Yeah.
Most 61% of them said, when you asked them who trained you, they said, well, I learned mostly on my own, which is a little disconcerting because...
Yeah.
Where they're in hospitals, they were definitely being seen in hospitals and emergency rooms over the course of that year. How were they getting sent home without being trained? And they didn't have home care. They may have had a little bit of a home care nurse time once in a while, but they really didn't have help at home. So these were people pretty much on their own, and that's why we called it Home Alone. And I guess the astonishing part of this report is that it didn't matter if you had a job or not. You had to do this, too.
Yeah.
And I think that the impact was that all of the caregivers expressed some level of stress related to doing all of this work, but it was clearly a higher level of stress among the employed caregivers, which is not hard to understand. It was also higher the more tasks they had to do and the more chronic illnesses that the person had. I mean, sicker and needing more assistance and, you know, much more required of the family caregiver, that's stressful.
Yeah.
And that means that you're taking something away from your job. So you have to. I mean, you can't be...
Yeah.
Completely at ease in either situation when you're worrying about one thing or the other, worrying about where you're not, what's happening there.
And
I know that very well.
Right. And you do note the silver lining.
I was never sure.
Yes. You do note the sort of a silver lining in all of this, a positive side, that family members who do these complex tasks, they recognize that they have a value that they bring to doing this.
Oh, absolutely. They and that's why they do it. They do it because they know that they're doing something really important for the person they're caring for, and many of them feel that they're doing it in a way that prevents the person from being put in a nursing home. So with all of the stress, with all of the aggravation, you know, there is that very powerful impulse to help the person you care about, and no matter what it does to the rest of your life. I think that's wonderful in its way, but my personal feeling is let's not push people to the point of almost, you know, really feeling that helpless, that they need more training, they need more support, that will even enhance the good parts of what
yes.
you're doing. So
well, let's talk about some of those. Let's talk about what employers can do, for example.
What employers can do, and I must say that AARP, the same time they issued this report with us, they also issued some other things about employed caregivers, and they're working hard. There's a REACT group, which is a Respect Caregivers Time, I think it stands for.
Mm-hmm. Respect a Caregivers Time.
That is trying to encourage employers to be more respectful of caregivers' needs. I think the thing that employed caregivers want most of all is flexibility. They want to be able to arrange their work schedules in ways that get the work done, but that allow them to take mom to the doctor or whatever the thing may be. They want to be able to talk about their caregiving without feeling embarrassed or worried that if it's known that they're caregiving, that they will somehow lose credibility in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody minds hearing about kids, but nobody seems to feel the same way about hearing about, you know, the caregiving issues. Employers can set the tone. They can set the environment that this is part of life, this is part of our employees' work, and we know that the employees who are caregivers and are given flexibility and support are more productive and are more likely to stay in that workplace because it is a safe workplace. There are, and I think it's easier in some workplaces than in others, and I will be first to acknowledge that. I think actually nurses have a hard time if they are also caregivers, because if they're in a hospital, they're working on shifts. It's not so easy to have a flexibility there. And a lot of women who are caregivers work in very small employment situations. So that's difficult. But I think overall, employers can acknowledge that their employees are doing two jobs, can help them make that work better for both, and can create a safe environment.
And I might suggest, so there is, you note in this report, that the National Alliance for Caregiving has a study of best practices in workplace
yes.
elder care, and these best practices actually could be looked to be replicated in other employment settings, and it may be a role for unions to start looking at the extent
yes.
to which their members are family caregivers and working with employers to start to put into place some of these best practices, as well as in non-union environments. When you make the case, you've got references in here about that when family caregivers are supported, you have lower absenteeism, you
yes.
have enhanced productivity, reduced costs, et cetera.
Absolutely. I think unions can play a really important role. And I think it is changing. And there are examples not only from the United States, but also from the UK and Canada, other places where this is a global problem.
Yes.
So it's not as if somehow we're doing something that nobody else has thought about.
Right.
There are things to learn about other employment strategies. I think caregivers appreciate very much just the acknowledgement that they're doing a hard mm-hmm. job, and that the employer will be flexible enough to work with them. They're not going to take advantage of it. And it's much better for everyone not to have to, you know, do phone calls on the side and kind of conceal this important aspect of your life. That's
right.
stressful in its own
yeah.
right. So it needs to be more in the open. And I think we're getting
there.
A lot closer to
right.
that.
And Carol Levine, we're about out of time, but can you tell listeners about the website that you have, give the URL, and let us know
yes,
if they can access
website.
The report? Yes.
Yes. The United Hospital Fund has a website called Next Step in Care, and it's www.nextstepincare.org. We have over 27 guides for family caregivers on navigating the healthcare system. We have guides for healthcare providers, including nurses, who work with family caregivers. We have a toolkit for providers on helping family caregivers through transitions in care. So we update it regularly. We are always looking for new guides and new content. We really found in the past year our, what do you call it, viewership? The people who come to the website, yes. It's increased. It's doubled.
Great.
And so I think we're getting out there. We're very pleased about
great.
That.
Great. And can you access these reports from that site?
These reports are actually on both the AARP Public Policy Institute website and on the United Hospital Fund website, which is www.uhfnyc.org.
Great.
So they're not on Next Step in Care, but they are on
great.
on uhfnyc.org and on the AARP Public Policy Institute.
Well, Carol Levine, Director of the Families and Healthcare Project for the United Hospital Fund, thank you so much for, one, doing this important work, and, two, for sharing the work on Health Styles. It's been delightful to have you back.
Thank you very much, Diana.
And
a pleasure.
I'm Diana Mason. I'm one of the producers of Health Styles that's brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us online at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. Thanks for tuning in.